others going out to the TV.
Maybe they are done.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we are about to take National Mine or Union of Mine Workers. Are they present now? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. We also want to extend our appreciation for being allowed to come and address this House. My name is Joseph Montisetsi. I am the Deputy President of the National Union of Mine Workers. Next to me is Comrade Lotando, a resource person in our subcommittee of economic transformation. And behind me is Comrade Nkosazana Mziza, who is our parliamentary officer. In my extreme left, Comrade Parks Matthew, who represented Kwasato. I don't see him now here, but we are the same team. We want to outline that in our presentation we have divided into four categories, which is introduction, definitions and outsourcing, and conclusion, in-depth comments on MPRDA billing. These are contained inside the document. In the introduction, we say that the promulgation of the Mining and Petroleum Resource Development Act 28 of 2002 recognized the state's sovereignty and custodianship over the country's mineral resource. We will know that before, companies did own 100% of our minerals, but now the state is hands-on, and we welcome that as the National Union of Mine Workers. The delays in the bill have left the workers vulnerable to the LRA Section 189, since Section 52 of the Principal Act is open to various interpretation, a process which contributed the share of jobs in the industry. Here we want to say that Section 189 consultation processes does not recognize Section 52, where a thorough consultation must take place before. In fact, the company should actually write to the minister 1 year before they can anticipate to retrench workers. So here we are calling for realignment of these clauses so that we can close the gap about this job losses. An example is now Angogoro Ashanti, whereby they have given unions 189 for retrenchment, as a notice for retrenchment, but they furnish the state, the minister, with Section 52. So this is a problem. So we need realignment on these clauses. It is our firm conviction that in our country, transformation and advancement of previously disadvantaged must be seen as a means not only to achieve sustainable economy, but as a catalyst for economic growth. The mining industry has a collective responsibility to ensure that mining companies comply with relevant legislative prescripts. In definitions, we are saying the NUA believes that there will be a greater contribution to the country's mineral wealth, community empowerment and alignment of portable skills towards expansion of the manufacturing beneficiation sector. We agree with this, with the bill, that the minister should have the powers to decide on the retention of minerals in this country for the purpose of manufacturing. There is no any country which can create jobs and become rich when it exports all raw material internationally. Not any country. You study history of Netherlands during the 1400s and Britain, they have done the same with their wool, retain the raw material and then have a vibrant manufacturing. So here we believe that the state is taking a good route, Since we know that the platinum is only be found in South Africa, little in Zimbabwe and little in Russia, and if we can retain our platinum for purpose of manufacturing, we will also make sure that the short supply of platinum internationally will raise the price of platinum. And we believe that the state must move swiftly to make sure that beneficiation took place. Meaningful consultation. The NUM is calling for the inclusion of meaningful consultation in the definition section, as we are currently finding it difficult to be meaningfully consulted in the implementation of charter, targets, and completion of the mining charter report before submission to the regulator. I think this has been said by various organizations inside the house. A mechanism must be actually crafted as to how we need to consult with our people through their language and so on. Equitable access, fair and impartial or reasonable, just and right while addressing social and economic imbalances of the past. The NUM makes this assertion to emphasize inclusive when it comes to women, youth, and people with disabilities. The NUM remains resolute on the exclusion of white women as historical disadvantaged persons, thus not convinced on the right on the current wording in the bill or the principal act. I think we all know that you can't, when people were part of benefiting from the whole 300 years in this country, come today and say they form part of the historical disadvantage. It's nothing that can be explained more. In debtors comments, Section 1, NUM welcomes the inclusion of the labor sending area to ensure economic growth in rural areas, partnering with the municipality, IDP, and COCTA would be beneficial. We also welcome the inclusion of residue stockpile. This will ensure historic stockpiles fall from MPRD, AEG, Jack Fountain operations. Section 10, NUM proposed insertion of 104, the railway manager and the mining rights applicant meaningful consulted stakeholders in the process of developing approval of social labor plans. Presently, what is happening, companies will consult the mayor in the municipality and they will decide what kind of social labor plan they are doing. Usually the kitchen soup and other things. Here we are saying stakeholders must be included, including labor as a whole. That to us is the definition of meaningful consultation. Section 10, ABCD, establishment of regional mining development and environmental committees should provide for a labor representative elected from organized labor in the affected region with voting rights. We think that workers, as the people who are the creators of wealth in this country and worldwide, they cannot be ignored when you take decision about what you do with the welfare that they are producing. The suggestion that the chairperson of the Ministerial Advisory Council be the Director General is constraining on advisory extent of the council. The DG by appointment and job description is an advisor of the minister, therefore the incumbent becomes irrelevant for such position. The NUM suggests that the chairperson of the Mineral Advisory Council be elected by the appointed council members. Here we think that an example is the Mine Health and Safety Council, where it is able to run with issues that are relevant to its mandate without impediments coming from the minister or the director general. So that's what we are putting forward to be considered by NCOP. Section 11, NUM opposes an insertion that empowers the minister to impose an obligation for the transfer of the employment conditions of previous holder in line with Section 197. Section 23, NUM moves the increased prescribed period of 30 to 6 days to which have its negative effects on investment and on jobs. I think here in Section 11, we want to emphasize the fact that somehow Section 197 is being undermined by certain companies that comes in and the lower conditions of employment of workers that they found them working in that particular company. Hence, we're calling for an amendment here that will favor workers. Section 26, the addition on this section are welcome. The NUM is of the view that both DMR and DTI should collaborate to develop an inclusive beneficiation strategy aligned with the current IPAP. I think that's what we have been saying from the beginning, that manufacturing purposes in this country can only be boosted by a vibrant beneficiation strategy. Section 28.3, we welcome the addition, which requires mining rights holder to submit report detailing compliance with the Act and the Charter. It will make compliance with the Social Labour Plan and the Charter non-negotiable. In depth of comments, Section 47, we welcome the removal of the word reasonable opportunity, which has been replaced with 30 days. This insertion will enable enforcement of the legislation compliance. NUM is the replacement of Mineral Petroleum Board with the regional manager throughout the amendment bill, thus tightening the implementation of 52 during downscaling and retrenchment. And Section 47, okay. Section 52, the mining industry continues to shed a lot of jobs. Therefore, the NUM proposed insertion of Section 52, which is thorough consultation before you apply Section 189. The Section 52 consultation should precede the Labor Relations Act of 1995, Section 189, for all mining rights holders. Here now, we want to close the gap whereby the company will wake up in the morning and serve the unions with Section 189 without thorough consultation. Section 44 empowers the minister to establish a council depending whether he sees the need to do so. However, the NUM is of view that the council existence is crucial, therefore propose that must should be replaced by May. Yeah, that's our position on that one. And Section 56 ABCD, nomination of the chairperson of Mr. Advisory Council to be anyone except the DG. The NUM is of the view that this will be strenuous on incumbent and that will be difficult to achieve the council objectives. We know that the DGs, they have a lot of job to do. If you depend on him to call meetings and to observe the meetings, it will mean that you cannot have more than two meetings a year. Section 52A, we propose that the Ministerial Advisory Council chairperson be elected by a secret ballot on the first meeting to which members referred. EG should be eligible for nomination and elect. Section 26107, NUM proposed an establishment of the Mineral Beneficiation Commission, funded and managed by Council for Geoscience. Section 73, we welcome the strengthened penalties. The replacement of 100,000 with a 10% of the annual turnover and imprisonment of 2 years for 4 years. We hope this will yield transformative results. Presently, there has never been effective compliance in terms of the Charter and the MPRDA. We know that the Charter was calling for the workers to be given shares in the mines, and that has not materialized. It's just something which have not benefited workers up to so far, except in the case of the Kumba iron ore, where we have seen workers benefiting, and nothing is happening in other mining companies. Outsourcing mining license operation, Section 101, include early determination conditions for outsourcing.
by approval the minister, on approval the salaries and working conditions should remain the same. Here we are calling to an amendment which will be similar to the laws in Scandinavian countries, your Sweden and Norway, whereby subcontracting will not come and reduce conditions and salaries of workers. If subcontracting comes, it should actually, the law should clearly stipulate that those workers are not going to be disadvantaged by the fact that they are now falling under a subcontracting. That's our language here. Implementation of equal pay for equal value. In the mines, you will find miners underground, some working for a contract, some working for a main company, all of them drilling in the same panel. The other one being paid 3,000, the other one being paid 7,000. That thing is a crime against humanity. That's why we have to stop it. And we believe that the lawmakers here have that opportunity of making sure that we help our people. Complies with all commitments made with all other government institutions, e.g. skill plan. This is the conclusion of our submission, but the man in my right hand, Comrade Lutando Brook, who is our resource person in the Economic Transformation Committee, will close the gaps in line with this presentation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, TP, and evening to honorable members. I think emphasis needs to be placed on three critical sections of the bill. The first one, we place emphasis on Section 11. On Section 11, on all transfers done by the minister, we're placing emphasis on alignment with Section 197 of the Labour Relations Act. And that section speaks of the conditions of employment. If a new company, we have seen this happening with the former De Beers mining companies that were sold, for example. We are currently in court as the National Union of Mine Workers taking one such company based on these issues whereby the conditions of employment are lessened. The second emphasis is on Section 52. Section 52, which deals with downscaling and retrenchments, hence the NUM is proposing an insertion of Section 52.4a, which should emphasize that on all mining licenses, the mining right holder should comply with Section 52 of the Act before implementing Section 189. Currently, the status quo is 189 with 60-day process, and 4 consultation is the order of the day. Thus, the MPRDA process is unimplementable at this current rate. And lastly, Madam Chair, Section 101 deals with contractors and stipulates that the employees working within a particular mining right are employees of that particular right holder. And in terms of Health and Safety Act, any employee that is injured in that particular right, Mine Health and Safety Act is enforceable. Now we are saying in terms of conditions of employment, whereby two people are mining, the other one is working for the company and the other one is working for the contractor, and that person working for a contractor has less a condition of services, and thus we are placing an equal pay for equal value. And those are the critical areas I think the committee should focus on. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Now I would allow the members to ask questions of clarity. No one. Thank you.
Chair, thanks. Thank you, Nam, for your presentation. There is a slide where you speak about appointment of a mining advisory council, where you say you exclude the DG to be to form part or to be the chairperson of the council. I want to check with you, don't you think that in terms of accountability, we need someone with authority in whatever that we need to contribute on? Or do you see the advisory council being the line function where we just can make use of just a line manager? Can I get clarity on that? Thanks.
No other question? All right.
Thank you very much. We have put an example about the Mine Health and Safety Council, where it works effectively than the board that was there before the establishment of the council. We think that a council which is not controlled much from the department, but with representative, of course, because these are stakeholders, we'll have representation from the state, the labor, and So we think that it can work effectively than the one that will depend on a DG.
Thank you very much. Quite straightforward.
Yes, Chair. Just to add on it, I think emphasis are not in the participation or exclusion of the DG. The issue is that the multi-stakeholder advisory council should be the chairperson of that particular council should be elected from the stakeholders. Emphasis is on that, because we're saying the DG, because the council's name is advisory, we're saying the DG already holds that particular portfolio. And thus, the importance of the independence, but also inclusive. I think this is also emphasis on inclusive of civil society, which includes organized business communities and organized labor. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Now we are going to give to South African Mining Development Agency.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for allowing us to make a presentation. My name is Bridget Khadebe. I'm the president of the South African Mining Association, and with me sits Mr. Tabu.
Can I disturb you for 1 minute? We just handicapped here. We didn't receive any presentation to ourselves.
From us?
Yes.
We emailed that more than once.
Madam Chair?
More than once, okay. Yeah.
Mr. Bao can agree. I actually sent it a number of times to him. But I see I do have a few here, but about three or four.
Okay. Thank you. Sure. Thanks. You can continue, ma'am.
We are an organization that was set up when the first charter negotiations began. And we saw the need to set up this organization for the very reason that there was one voice of an existing operator, and the junior mining sector did not have voice. We represent companies that have an asset base of 50 million to 7 billion. Above that is the chamber. Those are the majors. Now, we didn't just come with the thumbsock definition of that. The Mineral and Energy Policy Center that was existent at that time, the two successive researchers on the mining sector, and that's how the junior mining industry was then being developed. And we sit here with a lot of unease. Unease, Madam Chair, because when we started with the Act, we had high expectations. At that time, 83% of the oil reserves and resources was owned by four companies and the state minimum. And we're very happy about the state becoming the custodian of the mineral rights and everybody having access, including foreign investors of any color having access. And we thought by so doing, In 2017, we'll be talking a different story. A different story in terms of ownership, in terms, different story in terms of workers' rights and employment equity and human resource, a different story in terms of environmental protection. But what we see is that those disparities have been here and there attended to, but in effect, there's a lot to be achieved. Now, what do we mean by that? I personally started 29 years ago as the first producer. There was no BEE. There were laws that said women are not allowed to go underground. We had to defy the legislation and became a producer of minerals on a contract mining basis, building shafts, building mines for the big mining houses. And that's how, with the emergence of South Africa Pty Limited today, we find that other producers came up. And fortunately, when the mining law and the charter was established, many other producers came on board. So you might have a woman talking to you, but I know how mining is done. Whether it's in Sedrun in Switzerland, where the two ventilation shafts were built by us, Joinville in France for the French government, the underground nuclear waste disposal shop was built by me. No, I'm just saying we are builders and we know what we're talking about. And we are very, very worried about the status quo of today. And what we are saying in terms of SAMDA is the following. We welcome the fact that the state is the custodian of the mineral rights, and we are very happy with the objects of the Act. The objects of the Act, of course, I'm going to just glide through a lot of things, and you have our submission. Talks about the state becoming the custodian, and it also talks about there has to be environmental protection, that the women must be included, including rural communities. It talks about employment and advanced social and economic welfare of all South Africans, and it also talks about exploration and mining and the workers' rights. But nowhere in the object of the Act does it talk about ownership. Now, when you have in terms of the ownership, then what we did, we then said as SAMDA, we need to insert J in clause 2, section 2 of the Act. It ends with I, and we said, let's put in a J. And the J will talk about promote and ensure effective ownership to historically disadvantaged South Africans, of not less than 26%. At that time when we created this Act, we didn't have the charter, and if that charter continues, it has already been gazetted, obviously it will then go in line with what the charter is saying in terms of equity participation. But what we are saying is that, what does that mean? Effective ownership definition in the charter means the meaningful participation of black persons in net value ownership, voting rights, economic interest, and is also management and control of mining entities. What me as a woman has made me a little bit happy, because I'm benefiting, but I'm also mindful of the fact that there were white women that were also by the law excluded from owning mines. And those are the things, HDSA changes that right, but the Chinese can get access and naturalized citizens can get access. And, the South African-born and bad white women are not getting access. And I know I might be sounding irrelevant to many people, but what I'm saying is that I'm just a very responsible person. We should not continue alienating people, and don't do to them what they did to us. And to the extent that maybe the white woman earned something, she might have been able to keep the ownership at home. We find that countries have been offshore listed, and then we lose everything. But that's not for another discussion. Now, further than that, in terms of the first come, first serve, in terms of Section 9 of the Act Amendment Bill, we are quite concerned that SAMDA is going to promote auctioneering of rights and auctioneering. The auction system is not going to help us in any way, because the junior mining companies don't have cash, and if you have to go and participate with a seasoned operator, there's no way you're going to make it. So what we are saying in this form is that what we need to do is we have to focus towards making sure that, while the retention of Section 9 clauses are there, and we should not replace them with this auction system. The auction system is not going to help in any way. And as you go further, when you talk about mining rights, and mining permits, the status quo right now is the minister, first the regional manager, you go to the DMR region and you apply, the regional manager processes that document then goes to national and further processing takes place. What we have experienced is if you have a regional manager that is not conflicted and you have a minister that's not conflicted, all things are done properly. But what but history has shown us, unfortunately, that there's been ministers that have been owning mines. I can only talk about previous minister, and the DG owned more mines than many of us. Now, if you have sections in the Act, like if you look at the Act, that's Section 47, Section 25, Section 49, Section 50, 51, 53, 55, all those sections that doesn't allow the minister to delegate, you then have a problem. Because the minister then, when there's a dispute or when there's a competition between who gets what and he has a share or the DG has a share or the DDG has a share or the regional manager has a share, you have a problem. Now, this is not pie in the sky. You just need to go and look at what has been declared by some of them and you'll see. And what I'm saying is that now, what are we going to do about it? We can't continue like this. Will you find that you're going to apply as a region? And then you are told that your license, I mean, your application was not the number one, someone else. But it's not true. You understand? And you don't have proof. But anyway, what I'm saying is that we then decided, let all this now be handled. Maybe, and when it's no more maybe, we are very aware of the fact that if you're going to have a licensing board, and that licensing board created, hopefully, by the Portfolio Committee of Parliament, the same way the SSBC board is being created, you know, and stakeholders and members of Parliament of all political parties participate in creating that board. But that board will not be created by Parliament. What we were talking about, if you look at Section 56 of the Act, Section 56 of the Act talks about a council, MPRDA, Ministerial Advisory Council. Now, I was the deputy chair of the board when the very first Ministerial Advisory Council was created. Now, if Parliament creates that council, but now, right now, it's the minister that creates the council. It used to be called the board in the Act. Now, in the Amendment Bill, it's called the council. Now, the minister creates that council. Now, who sits in that council? Organized labor, as in Section 57. Organized labor, organized business. Now, organized labor is the unions. Organized business are the chambers. And then three government departments during the time when I was the deputy chair, it was the Department of Environment, Department of Labor, and the Department of DTI, because there's a lot of procurement in small and medium enterprises to get happening in the mining industry. And then you also have rural community, because in particular, Holomisa sat in that board representing Contralesa. And we also had women in mining. And we had the DG, the DDGs, and the DG was the deputy chair. I was the deputy chair, the DG was the chair. And we had the minister sitting in that board. But what we discovered that when the other minister came, the last board with Minister Sonjika did the right thing. Then another minister came in, she cancelled the board. And they then created another entity called MIGTET. Now, there's nowhere in the Act that talks about MIGTET. The board says very clearly what the functions of the board are. I mean, the Act, and what the board can, it's just the board that's going to advise the minister on all aspects, all clauses, all aspects of the mining industry, and all aspects of the Act. Now, then MIGTET was, at first there was nothing. Now, in that board, we also had subcommittees. Now, the leaders of the highest level set in the board, even the political leaders in terms of the DG, DDG, minister, and everybody. And the subcommittees, we had a human resource subcommittee, we had an employment equity subcommittee, human resource subcommittee, we had a subcommittee talking on beneficiation, we had a subcommittee on ownership, and the elements of the charter all had subcommittees. Now, what happened is that in terms of that, we ask ourselves, if that board was functioning the way it should, would Marikani have happened? Because we used to preempt all the problems that used to happen, and what we'll do is to let the subcommittees have a committee that will thresh out the problems because we are there. And then from there, and then, you know, some systems of solving the problem. But because it was an empty shell, there was no board at that time. Now we are asking ourselves, should the minister then continue? being the one who's going to nominate the board. And we say, let's rather go the way the SABC route is going. Let it maybe be, in this case, Parliament, Portfolio Committee. Organized. So then we'll know there will always be a board. Some that doesn't even sit on that board. Now, we don't know how decisions are made on that, because we are very vocal, and maybe we know too much, but it's good to know too much. Rather know a lot rather than not knowing much. But I don't know, but, you know, the present minister is willing, you know. I read about all these things that are said about him. He came up with a charter. Well, there's a management style that's different because he doesn't manage like all of the other ministers. But there was consultation with others. And, of course, there's a court case. But what is that court case going to help us? I don't know. So what I'm saying, let's go back to the issues. We're saying the Ministerial Advisory Board, which is now called the Ministerial Advisory Council, the nomination of that members should be done by Parliament, not by the minister. And the issues of the licensing, I mean the permits and the prospecting rights and the mining rights, it should not just be the office bearers and the ministry alone. There must be some sort of a council that might come out from the board that has been created by Parliament to help with the overseeing of that so that we have checks and balances. Otherwise, we're going to have a problem. Now, you know, time goes on. Now, after that, another thing that we wanted to talk about was Section 11. We are happy with Section 11 the way it is. We were just very worried in the past that Section 11 allowed the financial institutions not to go and get ministerial approval when they sell. And you find that in the selling and the purchasing of assets, you know, you are a B company, well, or maybe a junior white company, you don't have the money, dividends were never paid, you can't go and meet your obligations, you get either diluted, and before you know it, you don't own shares anymore. And continuously, Tabo says my time is getting up. Further, and then in terms of the petroleum industry, we wonder why the petroleum industry does not have its own legislation, rather. Because you find that they come like the adopted child, you know, because we're such a strong mining industry. And this is what we propose. Let us make sure that at least we must work towards having a standalone petroleum industry legislation so that at least once those benefits from the petroleum industry comes, we have that happening. And then you find that there's a section definition, section 23. Now, social and labor plan, the issue of the five-year social and labor plan review. We find that when you implement social and labor plans, every mining company has a plan. And there's so much of duplication and potential non-integrated work. And we were saying we need to create an integrated framework in which a social and labor plan must not just be done between the ministry and maybe the local municipality or the local mayor. It must also involve other